This is Dr. Brad Stacks. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Okay, fine. Sorry about that. Fine. Earlier in the call, you and some caller, I think the person who leads the party into the election is normally becomes the leader. Only as the person who leads the party into the election loses their seat, like in the case of Bernard St. John. Mm-hmm. And right. But the person who, because when you find out the party who wins the election, you'll find then the reporter at their headquarters obviously interviewing the leader. Mm-hmm. You don't then got to come the next day and elect a leader or select a leader. The person who leads it generally becomes the, unless the person loses their seat. I'm a little hoarse, actually.
You should probably drink some water.
Yeah, well, I can't do that now, though. Tomorrow is the fourth anniversary of the controversial signing, or one might call it infamous signing, of the four ministers and Keir Hill, the chef company in Barbados. One of Barbados' the most controversial things we have within the last 10 years. We must not forget about that.
Okay.
It also, on the 12th of May, the government said that they had abandoned the Keir Hill. Since then, they have not gotten back to the people of Barbados with nothing regarding what happened, the consequences, if the government have to pay out money for breaking the contract, whatever. They said nothing about it. This is how this government usually functions. I hope that Barbados will never have a government as poor as the Fernando Stewart administration. But more to the point, I like to say a prime minister like Mr. Stewart, a thoroughly weak and unpopular leader. He's an ultimate free reign or laissez faire leader. I would never like to see a minister like Mr. Ron Jones, whose behavior is very unbecoming. He, on the opposite side, is the ultimate autocratic leader.
And
autocratic. Okay. He's ultimate autocratic leader. Both of these leaders, style of leadership, always ends in chaos. That's an example. Prime Minister, look at Barbados, chaos. Look at Ron Jones, administration, chaos. You know? Both of them, I predicted that their tenure would end in chaos. Now, let me hand it to the Nation editorial.
Today's?
No. Okay. When this administration came to office in 2008, 18 months later, the Nation editorial did something to talk about the DLP now coming into office, and they spoke exactly about Mr. Ron Jones, right? He said that he's averse to delivering public tongue lashes to the teachers and things like that. And he said that his style has been not welcome, especially by the teachers and the principals.
Mm-hmm.
The editorial also mentioned that the minister's statements could be viewed as uncomplimentary to the teachers, and that this tactic that he has the capacity to undermine the respect for authority within the entire school system, and by extension, the overall society.
You say it's having an impact then now on our existing school system and some of the challenges that we found ourselves facing?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So they were very prepared in that comment, because Mr. Jones, we know throughout his tenor how he tongue-lashed the teachers. When you had some of the heads, like the heads of the trade union, the heads of the... They came out and the cry shame of him, the media personnel on the school premises. He said, if you're a teacher, don't bring them onto the school compound. And if you're a principal, don't bring them, none of the trade union leaders, right? Mm-hmm. We want to actually talk about Mr. Stewart every day.
Sorry?
So we know exactly what type of leadership he is. He is so slow. He is so tardy. He has allowed all of his ministers to do as they very well like. That's why we have the chaos of the country. You don't think
that it is strategic in his posture, in the sense that he gives them free rein?
No, it's not strategic.
Or he knows that he does not have a large, 14-16 is a pretty difficult place to be.
None of those matter. None of those. That's not strategic. That's his character. Right?
That's his personality.
That's his personality.
He's a Democratic-type personality, right? Easygoing, laissez-faire.
Okay. We allow others to make their own decisions, and that always ends in chaos. And the issue people keep bringing it up is not a fact, because he took over from Mr. Thompson. At that time, he had 21-9. So he had, it didn't about the Elbow Room issue, right?
It was 2010, so, though. I remember 2010 the election.
2010 initially. And then Mr. Hamilton Lashley then went back, right? He went back with the D's.
Yes.
So
give some him one more, increase the majority,
right.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Give him one more then, right? So he had the 21-9.
And he got voted back in? Even with that laissez-faire, all those things, personality trait that he showed the country for 4 years or three and a half years before elections in 2013.
Yes, he got back in. Mm-hmm. But look at Barbados. Look at Barbados. For what effect? You understand? Yes, he got back in.
Mm-hmm.
But to the damage in the Barbados.
You feel he's going to get back in again? Or you feel he's going to be resounding? You believe you're going to have a scenario like 1999?
There is no way. You don't need a survey for this. Barbados was never so badly off in its history.
Mm-hmm.
Like even in the 1991 period, Barbados wasn't even near to this bad position. And in 1991...
Say that again? In 1991?
And in 1991...
Okay, we weren't as bad off.
We weren't as... Right. As bad off as now. In 1991, primarily...
I thought 1991 we had strikes with people to the tune of 20,000 people. We had the 8% cut. We had all kinds of things happening around that period when we brought into the social partnership and the unions and the private sector came together to tell the government, no, this is our country. 1991 was a pretty interesting time.
Yes, but I'm saying overall, if you look at the macroeconomics of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, basically, what the people really voted, what really gelled the people together, or brought the people together, was the 8% cut, you know. It was the 8% cut. When he cut the salaries of the people across the 8%. But
that was only public sector?
Yeah, the public sector. It was public sector land, but you know, once you get a big massive march, but people were complaining. But
it wasn't just the 8% cut. But you go on. I digress.
That was the springboard for the votes, though. For me, for the marches. But I was going to say, in 1991 period, the issue in Barbados economy was lack of foreign reserves. Where the prime minister then had to go into IMF standby arrangement.
Structural adjustment program.
Mm-hmm. Right? Now, but Barbados wasn't enough. Had the mount in the debt.
Mm-hmm.
They had the fiscal deficit that way. Mm-hmm. It was just the lack of foreign exchange. But
is a pretty big issue for a small open economy like Barbados.
Yes, it's a pretty big issue regarding your currency pay. Mm-hmm. It would be a big issue because Mr. Sandiford, when he went to the IMF, they suggested, because this give you a range of options. You pick your poison, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was one that was fair, St. David Sound knew that once he talked about devaluation in Barbados, it made no sense really in Barbados context. He said no, he would opt in for the same 8% cut.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. in the Lynn office, the staff, another set of poison there. But yes, that's a big thing. But what we are having now, we have everything on the table. No bomb reserves. Oh, let me tell you this. It's important to know this, right? Because Sir Erskine wasn't borrowing like foreign reserves to prop up the reserves. He was just spending, and he didn't have any that was necessarily to borrow to prop it up. But this administration over the period in office had borrowed very nearly $2 billion in foreign exchange. They had borrowed $1.9 billion in foreign exchange to prop up the said reserves. Even a classic example. Now, they borrowed $450 million from the Swiss bank loan in 2013, right? Mm-hmm. Only in 2013, you know, and the last amount they have was only $410 million. So they were borrowing all along, nearly $2 billion to prop up the reserves. But still, they don't have any reserves. Mr. Sanders, with tenor, he wasn't really borrowing reserves. So it was that he went to the RMF, and the RMF gave him the reserves. Mr. Arthur then was able to come in and make some adjustments and stimulate the economy, and then the economy grew up anew. But this one now, in 2018, is a whole complete difference.
So I want to take you back, though, because you've got veered onto a different... mm-hmm. You were more talking in terms of the leadership of let's zoom in on Prime Minister Fadlo Schor.
We go there.
You also juxtapose him against one of his existing leaders, who has a totally different style, a more autocratic, to do this, Mr. Jones. You were talking about that. He thought you were going to develop that point.
No, but
indicate, mm-hmm. Because you started to go somewhere, but then you went off.
I started, my German point is that if you're an autocratic leader, mm-hmm. or if you're a laissez-faire leader, mm-hmm. you were both in chaos.
Let me comment because I let you go. I think both of them have both merits and demerits. But a lot of it has to do with the society and what the society expects. And a more, I wouldn't say docile, because Barbadians are changing. But we more veer to a more charismatic leader who has a certain level of autocracy in his or her presentation. More so than the very democratic style. Because one of the things that frustrated me about Mr. Stewart's leadership was just being too democratic.
Democratic.
It's democratic. It is a democratic style leadership out of the laissez-faire body.
Democratic is like it's not autocratic. It's not laissez-faire.
But his is very democratic, and I use that word deliberately because I'm going to show you. You remember the commission that we had at the Lloyd Erskine Sandiford Center
with the two groups
with the BSTU and Mr. Jeff Brooms, when the unions were saying they don't want him anymore, a decision that could have been just made. Prime Minister Stewart did not just take a decision and say, I will do this, I will do that. No, he sent it to the courts.
Because he can't make
He sent it to the tribunal.
He sent it to the tribunal.
Which is that ultimately democratic style where you don't want to make a decision. You let the people choose.
No.
That's not laissez-faire.
Listen, right? That's laissez-faire. Laissez-faire is when you take the decision in your hand as the leader and makes a decision. He did not make a decision.
Which is democratic. You let the things fall where they so ever be.
Listen, right? I really want, because I got much time, because we don't go and get away with this. But I know laissez-faire is something completely different to democratic, right?
We're gonna have to wrap it up, though. I'll give you some good time.
That's good.
Okay. So thanks for your call. Good contribution. You shared some thoughts. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning. You're on the air. I'm not hearing you. Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air. I should really give good morning, Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Yes. How do you do?
Doing well, thanks.
Great. Now, two things. I feel that elections, there's something called CXC examinations.
Mm-hmm.
Which
the common entrance, which is on the 8th of May.
Which happens early in May.
Mm-hmm.
And all exams must start at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
For the Caribbean. And therefore, mm-hmm. seeing that the facilities of the schools, many of them are used for polling stations,
mm-hmm.
seem to suggest that elections, that man has good ideas.
Who's ideas. That man? Who's that man?
Mr. V. V.
Oh, Mr. V, yes.
So it seems to me
mm-hmm.
that elections are either be very late in April or very early in May.
Okay.
On one side.
Sound like a friend of mine who predicted the date on the 3rd of May.
Right, could be there too.
And the reason for the 3rd of May is to accommodate the common entrance, because you want to fix back the classrooms, you don't want to disrupt the students, etc.
Right. See, so the common entrance and also the CXCs, all those happening.
But we here actually pontifying and calculating and trying to determine. You don't think we should know this date by now, though?
I think we should know.
Every 5 years, we should know that in 5 5 years, elections are on such and such a day. As some other caller suggested
In order to create history, you have to do something different.
Yes, I heard the comments. I heard about the comments. I didn't hear the actual comments, but I laughed. I said the typical honorable friend is short.
You have to do something different. The thing I want to find out is, does the Road Traffic Act has anything in it to do with school zones and the speeds that people travel at on speed zone and on the school districts?
Say that again. Does the Road Traffic Act have anything to do with the speed zones?
Speed limit. School zones, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's one question I want to find out. Because I find that, for example, the school by St. Matthew's there, by St. Matthew's Church, for example, the traffic, even the traffic warden complains, the amount of speed that people pass there when she's trying to get into the road to stop the traffic to let children pass over, cross over to go to the school.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little more comprehensive than that, though. The Road Traffic Act covers so many things, inclusive of the school zones. So it is about the safety of the persons using the road, including driver, pedestrian, and pillion and all.
If you go to North America or to England or all those places, in every school zone, between certain hours,
mm-hmm.
the speed limit is drastically reduced to 15 miles per hour, so that that if you break that barrier, that if you go over that, you can be prosecuted mm-hmm. for speed that you go over. If you go over the 15 miles per hour in that zone, there's no, I can't remember seeing any sign saying reduce. You may see reduce speed, but you don't have a speed limit. Like when you go on the highway, certain parts of the highway, it comes down from 80 to 60.
Yes.
And if you in the school zones areas,
mm-hmm.
they need to say come down from 60
mm-hmm.
to 15
mm-hmm.
between certain hours of the day. Say mm-hmm. 8 o'clock in the morning or 7:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. whatever to 9:30 or something like that, and the speed zone should be, because we're going to wait till some school child get knocked out of the road because the crosses are so poorly marked and the signs are so minuscule in terms of, and you see, I think the two people crossing, it is so small that sometimes people don't even observe it.
So that could be a project for some person.
All of our signage in Barbados, if you travel overseas, you can see a sign from a good distance, which says what the road is and that kind of thing. Our signs are written in the smallest font you can ever think about.
Mm.
From far. And I think that people have to take time out. And when these ministers and these top people travel, do they see anything that we're doing wrong in Barbados?
Mm.
Even the whole question of licensing the vehicles and things like that, we've got to stop somebody to put on a thing to check by the police. If you give the number plate or a special color designation, it makes life easy. But I would like to see something done about these zones for schools where special signage go up for speed limits in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let us wait until 3 or 4 children die as a result of an accident. And keep the school markings, keep the road markings visible. Because they're all faded out by the right paint. By road marking paint and get your things done properly
mm-hmm.
so that they won't just die out so fast. Have a great God bless day.
Thank you. I think that's a very good contribution. We do have that issue where a number of persons are actually disadvantaged, those road users who use the pedestrian crossings because of the fading. That's something that could be done every 3 months, every 3 months, ensure that those road signs, not just the signs, but particularly the pedestrian crossings. And I agree with him that the signs, some of them are in too small font, etc. I have someone here who says, please don't let the election be on my birthday. And another person says they agree that the prime minister is a laissez-faire type leader. Another person says laissez-faire and democratic. I think the prime minister's birthday is in April, so he may very well call the election on his day. You never know. We really don't know. Another person says we should have a fixed election date, the last Sunday before. Oh no, that person said four smiley faces and said it should be the last Sunday before October the 31st. I don't know why. I don't know what that means, but I think that's a special day for another particular party. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning, you're on the air. Thank you for holding. Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air. I'm not hearing you. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Oh, so when you hear the beep, that means that you're there now. So because you can hear the program apparently all the time on the telephone.
Okay.
First time calling, how do you hear? Nice to hear your voice.
Oh, this sounds like a regular voice, but if you say you're a first time caller, welcome. Yay.
Thank you. I need to be encouraged to call again, so I really appreciate that. because there's got so many people that call all the time, you know, you gotta try. This is the first thing, just to clarify though, this thing about not being able to park in wheelchair parking and so on, it's a private property. Let me say, not that I park in wheelchair parking, but there have been times when the whole car park full and they got nowhere else to park. And they got places now where they have such an abundance of wheelchair parking that sometimes, you know, they really have not very much choice. But you're in a private property. Because the supermarket space is private property. Even the upstairs, downstairs car park, city center is a private property. How could police law extend onto private property?
And you really want me to answer you? Because if I shoot a man on private property, the police shouldn't come and extend the law.
That's a capital crime.
Yes, whether it's capital or not, you're infringing on things that impact the law, and therefore the law should be applicable.
But you can't apply a law that prescribes the use of private property.
No.
Me killing another man on private property, I taking a man's life. So
right.
That's something different. I mean, I know his life is private property too.
Let me let you finish.
No, you go along then, because you understand where you're coming from.
No, I don't understand where you're coming from, because you're prescribing
to a public person that they can. There's a certain way that private property must be used. That is a law. So I go in
the
there
roads
now.
Of the country belong to the state.
No, but not the car parks. If you do it in a road, or if you do it in a public building, I could understand. Well, maybe the law extends in the public spaces. You know.
So you think that
property,
there should be no wheelchair parkings? Is that what I'm understanding you?
I'm just trying to understand how it is that a law could extend into the whole people can use their own private space.
Okay.
How could I be offensive to the crown if I am doing something that's offensive in someone else's private space? I mean,
but you can do many things that are offensive. You can go in there and steal something from off that same property.
Taking a life is stealing. Taking a life is stealing somebody's life. So stealing is a problem no matter
where. No. You're stealing goods and goods from. No. You go to the supermarket and you steal 2 packs of bread.
I know, but that is.
Which law are you infringing on then?
No, you're stealing a life.
You're not killing a person.
Property. No, I understand, but I'm saying to you that stealing a life is like killing someone. Killing someone is stealing too. All right.
So let's go off. Let's continue on private property and see if you're because you're making an excuse for every. Other suggestion. If I go on private property.
We don't know how to talk with me, though.
Seriously. If I go on private property and I do something that is not good, let's say I
do anything but steal.
Create
I do
fraudulent activity. Let's say I do fraudulent activity. The law shouldn't go so far.
I'm probably stealing again.
No, this one is not stealing. No, I'm under invoicing now. I brought in some goods and I said they were only $13, but in fact they were $26. The law shouldn't be applicable there? And that's private property.
You're thieving something.
No, I'm not stealing. No, I'm not. I am misrepresenting the truth.
You because you're taking money or the taxes of Barbados. So
no,
Barbados
it can't. It can't be. No, that's a secondary element. The taxes being impacted, but yeah, what but, did they just do on private property?
If I go into somebody's car park space, I am infringing on the taxpayers. I am not taking anything on the government coffers. I'm not doing anything.
Okay, so
that.
Let us not argue. Like, let us not argue. You don't have any problem with parking in?
No, don't. I'm just. The question is, how can you make a law that determines how people can use their property? You know, how people can use, or I go into your property and I infringe on the laws of Barbados because I've used your property incorrectly.
If you have an accident in the car park, who are you going to call?
That's between me and the person that I hit.
Oh, so the police doesn't come into play?
Yeah, between me and the person that I hit, and the police comes into play to make sure the insurance that's between me. That's a civil action. That's civil.
I think the fundamental issue that I'm having with it is that the law extends whether private or public. The law is to protect you, and it is to protect me.
I don't mind all that crap talk. That's all fancy talk. Man.
Okay.
Fancy talk. You know, I think the wheelchair people deserve to have a space and stuff, and it should be recognized and so on. But I just don't know how it is that the government could step in and say that this is the case because they have the right to do that. I mean, okay, it needs to be explained. Okay, you've tried to explain it to me, obviously said not got it. So I dance upstairs. Okay, so maybe there are other explanations, or maybe what you have said is at the beginning, the end, and I am just completely
wrong. I think
we
need to treat people who have challenges.
I have no problems with that. I agree with that. I agree with what you're saying.
So why you call to talk about that when you could be talking about Mitchell and what's going on in Grenada?
No, because Mitchell and Grenada.
Seriously, Grenada. A wheelchair park?
If I ever saw one?
No, seriously, you're seriously spending time. This is 4 minutes now. On
yeah,
a wheelchair.
You threw it out. No, because if I go in a car park space and I got no more car parks to park in.
You should not park
all the time.
Because the person who just came from getting dialysis and...
Because you
the
got
parent,
people like 10 and 12 years. You don't even have that
the
many
person dropped
wheelchair
in there.
Cars on the road.
Okay.
Huh? They got some people who have really, really overdone this wheelchair car park space. And, you know, when the place park up, you're gonna have no choice but to park, or you can park in front of the people's door.
It may have a wheelchair, but it's not only for wheelchairs. We have them for senior citizens.
In a country
like Barbados, with an aging population, we have more senior citizens than the usual.
But that as well, that
place.
May well be so.
And
but
therefore,
look, how many times have you been into a supermarket, for argument's sake, that got about 15 wheelchair car parks and see the car
and
park
about 100 of the other parks? And you just have to walk two steps down.
All the parks full where you can do a park in a wheelchair thing, and that policeman come and tell you $500.
This comes into a good point. This segues into a good one, which is one of my good points, which is about personal responsibility. And I find too many of us are lazy, too many of us don't want to just go the extra mile to do things that we should be doing. Don't you think?
Because the car park wheelchair space because the car park full. And so park in your road.
I have a question for you. Not me.
You understand what I'm saying, though?
Not particularly, but I have someone who wants to ask you a question.
Okay.
Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Somebody else on the phone?
Yes.
I'm supposed to hear them?
Yes. Can you hear them?
No, he's talking now?
I can't hear them either. Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air. So there was someone who wanted to ask you a question.
Oh, me?
But
all right, let me ask afterwards. Let me just say what you got to say about guys. Look, I keep hearing these names called, the same as David Thompson years ago, the great David Thompson will lead us into some good point, some good part. No, we're hearing about
that was just
person,
your
though.
Prelim to get to.
No, might you stop trying to read my mind? You're an expert in business and international business and stuff. I didn't know you were a psychiatrist. Come on, man. Unless you want to be a psychiatrist. But
I'm not an expert, by the way.
Well, you get paid for something.
I'm a learning individual.
Oh, learning psychiatry.
I actually read people quite a bit, though.
You do? Oh, you do? That's why your glasses are so thick.
Probably.
Okay, fair enough. I got to watch you next day wear a pair of shades or something. My thing is this, okay?
You have 36 more seconds.
You got to be serious?
Very serious.
Mr. Numbers Mark, come in there and talk for 15 minutes. I mean, I like him, you know.
Remember that I'm the moderator.
Oh, you don't want to talk to me?
No.
All right, let me call tomorrow then, huh? No, you want me to call tomorrow, because 36 seconds, I could talk real fast, but normally when I talk quick,
taking up your 36 seconds to say...
Here's the thing, okay? And all of these people, you know, the two of them are like saviors. These are the ones who will do this job. Now, I don't understand. We got over 1,127 lawyers knocking about here. These people do their business. The court, High Court, is like their bridge town. That's where they do their business. They trade in that particular part of Barbados. That's where they do their trade. And they will say to you, you know, I'm a representative. I represent people in that environment. You know, I am your advocate. whether you're a corporation or an individual, come through me. I represent you in there. Mm-hmm. You will have to pay. You will have to pay for my services for that to happen. But don't worry. I can represent you too in Parliament. You put me in there. I could talk real street. I will represent you in Parliament. But, you know, you can pay me as a taxpayer, but, you know, truth be told, I would do a better job in Parliament than I would do through the courts because the courts are so slow. Now, to be honest with you, through Parliament, I don't see much difference either. Now, of all of these people who say they're going to represent me, when the Prime Minister gets up there and makes a stupid decision or makes a decision without asking anybody else, well, come on, you didn't confer. He just went ahead and do it. You know, we need to have some backtracking. Of all of these 1,127 people, and a particular one of the two people that have spoken are now dead. We still have one left that everybody is saying, oh, this person will run Barbados. That person has never decided, well, they can't represent you in Parliament. I can instead take this to court and represent Barbadians. Huh? Why has that not happened? Why has she not said, okay, or why has the ex-David Thompson not said, you know, I want to represent you. I'm so convinced that Barbados deserve a better way. I could pull my pockets, pay the $1,100 for court, that they charge you to go take something to high court, and bring it up in court because Parliament is not working.
All right. Thank you so much. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Since here on WhatsApp, I've been ignoring you. I'm sorry. There's one person who said something pretty interesting just a little while ago. I wanted to read it, but I have not. Right. He must remember that people have fundamental... Dear Ms. Gale, he must remember that people have fundamental rights and freedoms, and laws are not enacted to protect people from others, and that's enshrined in the same Bill of Rights. Interesting. And we have another person here with a nice Grenadian flag. It was quite refreshing, Ms. Gale, to hear the minister responsible for the public service commend them publicly. While his intentions were good, it was most unfortunate that there are still some heads who do nothing and thwart the business of the public service. And one will hope that the day will come when permanent secretaries and heads are on contract and paid for performance, as in the case of Singapore and Trinidad. Interesting. Then we have another person who I've read it, but I wouldn't read it. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Ms. Gale.
Speaking.
How are you, ma'am?
Doing well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ms. Gale, I heard the, I came on in time to hear the stats man. I know everybody likes the stats man.
Sorry? I didn't hear what you said.
I said I came on in time to hear the stats man addressing you.
Mm-hmm.
His contribution, no, he, now, did any more point in time you mentioned that Barbados was number one out of, voted number one to 144 for customer satisfaction, the ITC in Berlin? Did you mention that?
He didn't mention it. I didn't even know that. Number one in what? In customer satisfaction of what?
The ITC competition in Berlin, tourism. You didn't read it, Ms. Gale?
No, I didn't. ITC?
Well, I am surprised.
Could you share with me so that I can read it?
Yeah. Pardon me?
Could you share what you're talking about so that I can read it?
I don't have the actual script here, but I have it cut out the paper. Barbados was voted number one out of 144 countries that were polled relative to customer satisfaction on a lot of different scales. I won't go into details because other people might have seen this already as well. Okay. Barbados was also voted at number 23 position, the least corrupt country in the Caribbean. Did you see that?
This is in the corruption index?
Yep. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Didn't see that. Okay, well, I mentioned that because, you know, the stats, man, anything to bring down Barbados, he's on it like a pit bull.
Let me hear about you. Don't tell me about the stats, man.
Because I know that if anybody get downgrades, he's very quick to mention how many downgrades we had and how many more we're going to get. But I want to put some questions on the table. You might be able to answer them, or you might not be able to answer them. Because when he's mixed statements, sometimes people challenge what he say, where he get it from. So I can put some questions on the table. You see, we want to look at this economy, see where it's got where it is. I want to know, and maybe he can help me, I don't know, maybe other people can help. I want to know a couple of things. One, how much money did we get for the Barbados National Bank sale, for the OECB, and for the Barbados Mortgage Finance? How much of that money went on the foreign exchange account? That's the first one. The second thing you want to know, when we knocked down the Hilton number one, what was the book value? How much did we get for it before we went and spent another $350 million to build Hilton number two, which was a debt? I also want to know, what was the book value of Kensington Oval when we knocked it down and we built it at $250 million, another debt? I also want to know the stats man, particularly asking this already, to tell the people of Barbados, how come that Parliament voted $200 million to build a prison, and we ended up with a prison for $700 million, $250 million, 250% cost overruns, and nobody had been bought a book for that? Because I tell you why, I have heard members of the opposition on more than one occasion threaten that if they're in the government, they're going to bring in Scotland Yard, and they're going to bring in FBI and all these kind of things. I know they're going to pay none of it, but they're still going to bring them in. But I do hope, that if they bring them, one of the first orders of priority would be to check the prison account, the prison construction account, and the prison construction account for Kensington Oval. And that's just my if I want to hear the stats man on these issues, because he's keeping a lot of statistics. And the other thing, finally, we have heard a lot about the foreign exchange account, how the foreign exchange account has been seriously depleted. You read that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, I saw a graph the other day in the papers showing from 2012 to 2017 the foreign exchange account in decline. Now, you see, nobody has said exactly how much money we have spent on the importation of oil, how much money we spent on the importation of food, how much money we have spent on paying back the prison account, how much money we have spent on import of vehicles, how much money we have spent, how much money the banks, we have five foreign banks, how much money in profits those banks have exported during that period, how much money in foreign exchange, because remember, banks deal in Barbados dollars, but when they're going to export their profit, they go through the central bank. In other words, they take money from the central bank. These are statistics I would like to hear, so I can see exactly why we are at the point that we are at, because people are blaming this person, are blaming the next person, but we're not using any facts. I also would like to understand how much foreign exchange has been exported by the insurance companies in this country as profit during the same period, and how much money has been exported as profit by the retail sector in this country, which is now totally owned by non-nationals. You think you could round up those figures for me, Ms. Gale? But if you can't round them up, I'm sure he starts. Man can round them up. So I'll let and hear from him, because I'm sure he's going to have a lot to say. You got any comments, man?
The number one that you spoke about was indeed, I saw it on the president of the BHTA's page just a couple of days ago. It's not coming back to me. It's to do with customer satisfaction.
Mm.
And this was on the Caribbean News. So, yes, and I saw the, what's his name, High Commissioner in London, Mr. Guy, he also spoke to it. So, yes, I did recall that. So, my apologies. Mm-hmm. You did ask a number of questions.
Yeah, I don't expect to answer all of them, Ms. Gale, because you won't have the information at hand. But the central bank has the information. I wish
somebody
would get
it. You did ask some good questions. I'm going to get a gentleman to respond to some of the questions that you asked, because my issue with these types of queries is that they're not necessarily the most, they're not necessarily leading, or they are so leading that they're not necessarily leading you to what the issues are at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Barbados has a significant debt problem.
Mm-hmm.
Our deficit is too large. We're not growing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a small open economy where our reserves are showing that we only have 4 weeks cover.
Mm-hmm.
Those are critical issues. And when I hear scenarios like what happened with the prison, as in you've just implied, and mm-hmm. as Minister Inks, Dr. Inks mentioned, Senator Inks mentioned yesterday, where the 12 weeks come from, it causes me to question how serious y'all understand the matter to be. Yes, I know we have detractors of the administration. Yes, I know we have persons who are pro-B or pro-D. That becomes irrelevant when we talk about the real facts, which is that we are in a serious economic crisis. But and there's nobody, I don't like to, that's why I try myself not to get drawn into certain type discussions. Because if we, and I've said it before, Barbados is, like many others, the economy and the politics, they're inextricably linked. And oftentimes we try to have political solutions to economic problems. We know all of that. But the facts are very real. We are in a really bad place, if I put it in normal terms. And it doesn't look as though we haven't been told what is going to happen in 2 days, in 3 days, in 2 weeks, in 2 months, what is going to happen. We've had an estimates. We have an election pending. We have a lot of or lack of very little confidence in the economy right now. We are in a bad place. I'm not saying that the Barbados Labour Party hasn't made decisions that were not the most promising. I fully agree with you. And I fully agree that the Democratic Labour Party has done the same. But we need to have far more mature discussions about the real scenarios that we are presented with as an economy. And we are in Dutch guts as a country.
Ms. Gill, let me just say this. I don't go along with you being in Dutch guts. We're in a difficult position.
Sorry.
I said I don't agree that we're in Dutch guts. We are in a difficult position. But we have options. You understand? We have options.
And the issue, which is where my point was leading, we are not talking about the options that we have. The persons who, I mean, everybody talks. We hear people from all ends of the... Yesterday, even, for example, sometimes the persons who should be speaking are not speaking. And that's the problem with Barbados.
Well, Ms. Gail, let me ask you a question. Let's be reasonable. I was reading the other day that Puerto Rico... which is a colony of the United States, big part of the United States. Puerto Rico was $70 billion in debt. Puerto Rico has had to close about 170 of their public schools because they don't have any money to pay the teachers. Now, I would consider that dire straits. I don't even want to go to Venezuela, which is a big oil country. They did not have any foreign exchange to import food for their people, and they had to be lined up outside the store. I wouldn't even go there at all. But we have to acknowledge. We compare ourselves with the OECS. The OECS, most of them, have been selling passports by the hundreds. They haven't been doing trade or services to say that they earned these. They've been selling passports by the hundreds. And let me tell you a script I saw.
When you say selling passports, you mean the CIP program?
That's right.
Which is the Citizens by Investment Program.
Yes, it is.
But that's not selling passports. That is creating significant incentives.
But this is what
for
this is why, this is,
persons who hold pass or given persons passports when they invest significantly in the country.
Yeah,
and that has done well for many of the countries in the OECS.
But this is why you saw Miss Gail. Let me just repeat it to you.